Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the 21st episode of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And he is joined by Ben Tully. Be sure to check us out at our various online presences. You can find us on Facebook. You can send the podcast an email at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And every so often, elusively, Tiny will stream Star Wars games at his Twitch TV account at twitch.tv/TinyGrimes.
I don't know about elusively, but certainly not very often.
I mean, it's like a big secret. It's like sometimes. And then you do it, it's like, shh, don't tell anybody.
No, it's not at all a secret. I want everyone to be there.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
And we would like to make an announcement that our podcast has shifted a week. Since we missed an entire week, we decided to just move it 1 week. So it'll always be bi-weekly. But now we are going to be 1 week different. So it'll be every other week starting Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep away from like 100% confident release dates, I think, Tiny. I think obviously we're just people doing this out of the goodness of our hearts.
Wait.
I thought and so after our last there are definitely going to be weeks.
I thought after our last battle you were mostly machine now.
Well, I mean...
Is that not correct?
I still have the soul of a person.
You never had the soul of a person.
All right, so as close to people as you can get.
Okay.
So yes. Yes, we will try. It's always going to be bi-weekly, except for the weeks that it's not.
There we go. That sounds perfect. So this week we have a new force pack, or at least we should have a new force pack. We don't yet, but we will soon, but everyone else does.
Right. And not only is it a new force pack, Tiny, it is the last force pack for
the last one ever
cycle of, oh my god, that would be the worst thing in the world.
Ben, you scared me.
Yeah. Just the last one for this cycle. We finally have some spoilers for the beginning of the next cycle, which to me looks very exciting. I know you're a little more than disappointed because you have no idea who Kyle Katarn is. Please start sending hate mail, people. Tiny will not start learning anything about the Star Wars universe except for lightsabers unless you guys complain that he doesn't know anything.
I'm just pretending it's Mace Windu. It's Mace Windu. He looks really good. He's a little whiter than I thought he would be, but that's all right. I'm cool with that.
I mean, except at the end of the day, nobody wants to see Mace Windu.
I do. I'm not.
And no. Everybody wants to see Kyle Katarn.
To me, that boggles my mind that people are like, no. I don't want to see one of the heroes of the movies. I want to see some dude from some random video game. That's the guy I want.
Can we back up? I don't know what were there movies that happened in the time period before New Hope? Are you is that what you're suggesting here? I know they're coming out with sequels. Are you telling me there are prequels somewhere that I'm not aware of?
You should probably see them if you want to be disappointed. They're full of disappointment, so check them out.
You've sold me on them. Thank you.
all right, well, moving on. I got to say this new Force pack is pretty good.
Oh, is that your overall? So we don't have to rate it now. It's pretty good. We can just move on.
Yeah, let's go with like 1.5 thumbs up and then talk about something else.
Sure, sounds great.
All right, well, let's start with where the money is in the pack. Like, you're buying this pack no matter what because you want the Executor arrives. It has two resources as well, no real text, but the pod itself is amazing.
Yeah, so it's a pretty amazing pod, and so I feel like...
I want to start with the best card. The best card is the Sith Holocron.
Mm-hmm.
And you people out there might be going, are you insane? No, I'm not. Sith Holocron is amazing. At zero, it lets you blow it up, reduce your next Sith card by 3. What does that mean? It means free Force Lightning. It means turn 1 Palpatine. It means turn 1 Vader. Maybe it means both of them turn 1. I think you'd have to get pretty lucky to pull that off.
Yeah, I don't know how you would do something like that. Let's you would see. Still need 8 resources on the Six, table.
7. You could do that with Heart of the Empire. 1 Heart of the Empire, 2 resource objectives, a Sith Holocron. Boom, you just went Vader Palpatine. I think that wins the game.
Yeah, there's a good chance that might be an insurmountable lead at that point.
That happens like 62% of the time. Andrew did the math.
No, I don't disagree here. I think the Holocron is an amazing card. I think what it has done to Sith decks, and I was going to say this, is that I feel like, you know, there's a bunch of interesting objective sets here for this particular force pack. But I really feel like this objective set here with the Executor in it, really just, it completely can reshape the way that Sith plays. And I've seen it a couple times. That first turn, Palpatine is like, oh, I got a Holocron, and I have Emperor Palpatine here. I guess I'll just play that and still have a resource left over. Go figure.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't change how Sith plays. I feel like it just makes Sith better, which Sith didn't need. Sith right. did not need a better odd of putting out a turn one Palpatine. Like, now you can pretty reasonably go, like, turn one Protector, turn one Palpatine, or, like, turn one Chud, turn one Palpatine. That seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, no, I'm maybe better is definitely – ridiculous is definitely the right word there. It's just – it was also interesting. I think when I first saw the Executor spoiled, I had a – my whole thought process was like, wow, an 8-cost card. How are you ever going to pay for an 8-cost card? And the number of times that I've seen it paid using just kind of the resources that are on the board, either in the form of characters or double focusing objectives or Sith libraries, it's still an insane amount that I've seen that, let alone the number of times it just happens to be like, oh yeah, I have a Holocron and here's the Executor.
Yeah, I mean, turn one Executor is not out of the realm. I mean, it's a pretty reasonable possibility, especially if you're playing like Mahdi's Pod. You might even be able to go like Duty Officer, Holocron, Executor. That is a bonkers first turn.
Yeah, it definitely is. That would be the correct term for that. Bonkers indeed.
Yeah, so basically Sith got better, which Sith did not need to do. So hey, Ben, do you remember when Lightside had the advantage for like that week?
Not very well, but yes. Yes, I remember there was a period of time where the light side deck was a dominant
That feels deck. Like a distant memory now.
Yeah, dark side does really seem to be shaping the meta a little bit. Again, I mean, this is like one of those things that we talked about, right? It was back when Force Lightning and Vader and Force Choke shaped the meta. Everybody's like, oh, the dark side's gone crazy. And then there was a version of Han and Luke and Yoda with some Protectors, Wrecking Face, and then some, Chewbacca and the Falcon, Wrecking Face. But I mean, this pod is just really strong. Let's go over the rest of the cards in the pod.
I mean, there's other cards?
I mean, wow. Beyond okay. Holocron, yeah, so go ahead.
Well, we talked about the Executor, 8 cost, 3 Force icons, which is really cool. If you get sort of stuck with him and you can't play him, or you get that second copy, since it has 10 health, it's never dying. You can chuck it into an edge battle and auto win that.
That is true. I have yet to see the Executor die once it hits the table.
I haven't either. And he is amazing on defense. 3 guns. He has 3 white tactics, or 3 white objectives, so I don't normally attack with him. I'll generally sit him back as a defender. He doesn't have elite, so if you attack with him, he gets locked down. But guess what? Do you care that much if your Executor gets locked down, Ben?
No. So that Why was the not? Thing. So one of the things that we saw when we first started playtesting it, there was this decision moment, right? We spend all these resources, first turn, played the Executor. It's like, well, do we commit the Executor to Force here? And we did. And it didn't matter. Like, you could defend when you needed to in a pinch, and that was really nice. But you were really, at this point in time, playing the Executor for its ability.
Yeah, the Executor's ability is crazy.
And so, you don't need to be unfocused to use it, so.
No, you don't. And the next 3 cards in the pack all perfectly go along with it.
Right, so the reaction is, so there's a passive on the Executor, which is while this unit is undamaged, it cannot be targeted by enemy card effects. which in itself, that's a very nice ability. Yes. But it has a reaction. After a card is sacrificed, deal one damage to a target enemy unit or objective.
Oh, that sounds pretty strong. I remember the first time we played with this card, I was like, that is really strong. I can kill a lot of units. And then everyone that was watching us play was like, you do realize this has the word objective also, and you could just win the game here? And I was like, oh, yeah, I could just do like 4 more damage. Cool, I win.
Right. I mean, that's one of the more powerful things. And it's so strong. Like, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where when I first saw the card, I was like, okay, that's a fairly balanced ability, right? Like, you're only going to see the Executor so many times. You're only going to be able to put it into play a fraction of those times. And that just has not been the case. Like, yeah. I've seen people, like, pretty much play it every game. Depending on what supporting cards you're seeing along with it, there's one particular combo using it and the Killing Cold.
That does seem strong. I believe the Killing Cold said something about sacrificing units to remove damage.
From Hoth objectives, even if there's no damage on there.
Hey, Ben, are Espo Troopers that good normally?
No, they are not. But they are good if you can put them in the barrel of a gun on the Executor and shoot them against whoever you want and do one damage.
Yeah, not only that, but you also heal your Hoth objective as well.
Right.
That's a pretty handy combination. All right, so the next card is the ISB Liaison, which is actually a perfect card to be in this pod because it's good against sleuth decks, in case you see those, if you're worried about those. You get cheap chud on the board. And then they have this handy-dandy ability, sacrifice the unit to look at the top card of an objective or a command deck, then draw a card. So it replaces itself to do a damage to an objective or unit if you have the Executor on the board. And you get to look at your opponent's deck to see, for instance, like, should I go all out to kill Wookiee Life Debt? Let me peek. Great. He's got another Wookiee Life Debt. Nope. Not doing that.
I've definitely used that ability. It's very nice. Hoth Operations on the table. I was like, oh, well, I could blow it up. Let's see if there's a Hoth Operations at the top. Oh, it is. Never mind. I'm not blowing that one up.
Yeah. He's a very useful card for only one with a gun and one health. He fits so well with his with the wording of sacrifice with the Executor.
Sure. And then the last card is a Sith Event, Aggression. It's one cost. Play only during your turn. Action, each player must sacrifice a unit if able.
This card is amazing. And I got to give props.
So bonkers.
I have to give props to FFG for playtesting this well, because I don't read cards. So I've tried to use it about 6 times on my opponent's turn when they attack to completely blow them out. And this card would be the most broken card ever if it worked like that. Because I'm always like, this is the most broken play ever. And then they're like, yo, Tiny, I know you don't read cards, but you can only play it during your turn. And then it always crushes my soul.
Sure, except for that one time. And I've seen this happen a few times now. Where, like, my opponent has done everything they can. They're, like, already slipping behind. The Executor's on the table. They put all of their eggs in one basket and put Luke on the table with Trust Your Feelings. And it comes to your turn, and you go, okay, so I'm going to play Aggression. I sacrificed this, you know, stormtrooper or whoever happens to be out. Let's say it's a Espo trooper. Okay, and how many units do you have? You just have the one unit.
Yeah, that's.
And you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice that. And you know what the crazy thing about this one is, Tiny. And
what's
so
that?
This is that when you play this card, and if the Executor's on the table, it triggers two reactions off the Executor. One when your card is sacrificed, and one when your opponent's card is sacrificed.
Yep. So here's the scenario I've done a whole bunch of times. They have Luke and Protector out, and they feel all but invulnerable. I go choke the Protector, react Vader Protector, Aggression, wipe their board, and they pretty much lose at that point. It feels like just a bonkers good card against Smuggler's Protection kind of decks where they're going light on characters, but the characters they do have are very strong. This card is really tough. I mean, imagine them losing Chewbacca this way. That is just an absolute blowout.
I mean, it's been really interesting to see this card. And so I've been wondering a little bit if the Executor needs some way of being toned down. You know, things like, should this objective be limit one? Should the executor have a limit per phase number of times it can do its reaction?
Like, yes. It should be 3 times per turn maximum. Because we had a game where I was going up against somebody playing a rebel deck, and they slightly misplayed their turn and left me with 1 health on 1 objective. And they were clearly going to win next turn. And so I had to win. I had 1 damage on 1 of their objectives, none down, had to get them all down, and they had Echo Base Command, which means I had to get 6, 6, and 5. I was able to do that.
Sure,
Echo Base.
Echo Base is the
code. But I was able to get 17 damage in 1 turn from Executor, attacks, and then triggers. And the coup de grace was blowing up Darth Vader for the last damage. He went into the Executor. Palpatine shoved him in a tube. He said, "Master, what are you doing?" And then he launched him at the planet, and I won the game.
Is that how you're going to reconcile the cards here on this one?
Yeah, I've got Neil working up a screenplay right now, and we're going to shoot this sometime in the next couple of weeks. I get to play the Emperor because I'm the oldest, and I get to cackle a lot. It's going to be great.
Fair enough.
So basically, yeah. Executor borderline broken, I'm thinking.
Yeah, and so the only real big balance that I think that goes along with this objective set compared to and so what I've found with the deck that we have been running that uses the Executor is that it seems to be very inconsistent.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? So like we said, the biggest drawback here of the Executor is its cost. If you don't have the right cards to go along with it at the right time, it's just essentially a card in your hand that's, you know, great for an edge battle. But it's not the way you're wanting to play it. It's the same thing of like being fairly dependent on seeing the Killing Cold. You see the Killing Cold with the Executor, you know, it's money. You're gonna do great that game. You don't see the Killing Cold of the Executor, what are you gonna do? Like all of a sudden, like yes, it's a good card if you get into play, but you have a fairly limited number of sacrifice options in that deck, right? So
yep. It feels a lot like the old Sith decks that we used to play, where it was like, well, I hope I draw Vader and Palpatine. If I don't, I probably lose.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it definitely has that feel to it. And I've seen that a bunch of times, where like the one game, it is like just crushes faces. Like there's no units left on the board for a light side player. It finishes the game by just like, oh, is it my turn? And it dials at 8. Okay, I'll blow up 2 objectives by sacrificing 10 units. Okay, cool. Game over. That's great. And then the exact same matchup, the exact same players, it turns over and there's no Killing Cold. You don't see the Executor. You know, yes, you get out Vader and Palpatine maybe for cheap, but at the same time, you're just kind of running into the situation where you're not seeing your cards and the deck doesn't work.
Yep. And it's it would be great in a core set meta. Like you wouldn't care. But Lightside has gotten much more consistency out of both Rebels and Jedi Smugglers. There's just more good cards for the light side. You can no longer just say, I hope I draw Vader and Palpatine and then I'll win.
Right, right.
So it feels like my evaluation of this pod is borderline broken cards, and we need to find a deck that it's broken in. Right now I don't feel like there is a deck that I found where it functions at its peak and it's just totally broken.
Right. I mean, something with the Killing Cold definitely puts it close, but you're absolutely right in the sense that I feel like it still just isn't consistent enough for it to be like, oh, this is definitely the deck forever.
Probe droids go really well with it since they can come back from the dead. Espo troopers go really well with it since you can sack. I'm like, anything you can sack goes pretty darn well with it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on.
Sure.
There were other cards spoiled, right?
I mean, the entire... Is this a question that you're asking on the podcast?
It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's a joke.
It was hilarious. All right, so Scum.
I got it so well. I get jokes.
So we've got Hunt Them Down. This objective gains +1 resource value for each card captured here, and otherwise it just has 1 resource. I'm just not a big fan of that kind of ability generally. Like, I get the option to triple focus my objective if I want,
Sure, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to in this one. It's like, how useful is having three resources on this objective when there's no way of quickly removing focus from it? And I'm not going to say there's no way of quickly removing focus. There are several other kind of scum cards out there that will remove focus when a card is captured. I'm thinking particularly of Boba Fett's objective, which I can't think of the name of.
Because it doesn't matter, because it's been bad since the beginning of time.
But whatever the name of it is once a card is captured, you can remove a focus from a scum card.
Yeah.
And so that would be great. It's a nice little, you know, little a combo there. And while it can get you out of a pinch when you're in a situation that you need those three resources that turn, recently I've been seeing a lot of scum decks that don't really require that kind of extra resource advantage, right? They normally have a resource advantage that's very high. When they have things like Big Fortuna, a number of prized possessions on the table.
Yeah, the weird thing is
various versions of Feeding the Pit and the Almighty Sarlacc that give them more resources.
Right, you can't put the Sarlacc on this one. That's a little bit disappointing. I kind of assumed it was Tatooine, and I looked at it again, and I was like, oh, it's actually not.
Nope, no trait.
So even less option. I feel like it'll be good down the road. Like, there's a lot of design space for cool capture mechanics and more mechanics that pull focus off objectives. And if that becomes good down the road, I think this will be an amazing objective. But for the time being, I'm pretty much, not that great.
Sure.
How about Dengar? Is he broken, uber broken, or the most broken card ever?
Well, except for unlike the Executor, who only costs twice as much as him, Dengar only has three health. He has the ability, so Dengar costs four, has three health. He has two black unit damage. And he has the ability, you may attach units captured from play to this unit face down. So essentially you're just replacing where you're capturing cards. And then he has a reaction. After this unit is focused to strike, it gains one combat icon of your choice for each capture card on it until the end of this strike.
That's really strong. Like, if he was in an amazing pod, he would be probably a top five card in the game.
Sure. I mean, potentially the reason why he's not an amazing pod.
Exactly. basically, the way I look at him is, Lightside does not have direct removal. Like, they don't have Force Lightning. They don't have Capture. So he doesn't have to worry about that. But what they do have is Han, Luke, Chewbacca, Let the Wookiee Wins. Rebel Assault, exactly. So three health means if you put a bunch of cards on him, they're getting him back at some point. Like, there's no game where if you put him out early and capture three cards, there's no game that he won't die. It's just, can he do enough things to the board before he dies to make it worth them getting those three cards back at one time?
Sure. I mean, there's been talk. I haven't really spent a lot of time with Scum since Edge of Darkness came out, or with trying to use this deck, this set of cards, mostly because we don't actually have this pack in hand yet.
Yeah, so just to be clear, what we were doing, as soon as stuff got spoiled online, we went and actually printed out cards so we could play the Executor because he was so broken.
Right, and so I did not do that for Dengar.
Yeah, same here.
And so is one of those things where I feel like that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, really nice combos in here. You know, people have been talking about running Dengar with Boba Fett's pod, not for Boba Fett, but for the Mandalorian armor, which will give you extra three health once it's attached to Dengar. So now you're investing six resources into one set of cards to try and keep him on the table. Also, maybe potentially running him with the Emperor's pod so that you have access to the protect character royal guards that are available in that pod. So if you had some type of combo out like that, you can maybe bump him up to somewhere where he had somewhere close to nine health, which would make him stay on the table a lot longer. But at the end of the day, he's still very fragile as a unit. And it, like you said, it depends on how much you're going to get out of him as a unit, changing which icons you're using to win the game in that situation for it to be worthwhile.
Yeah, and you can just tactics him out. Like, you can put 2 to 3 to 4 tactics on him, and then you might be thinking, well, at least I can play Lucrative Contracts. But the problem is, if you play Lucrative Contracts, you can't play Palpatine unless you're just splashing Dengar and Lucrative Contracts into a Sith deck. It becomes really restrictive figuring out a way to both give him health and pull off tactics icons off of him. So you're kind of stuck with which direction do I want to go with him, and it becomes very difficult.
And so the other cards in the objective set are also interesting. So there is two copies of a 3-cost, 2-health vehicle fighter. Tiny, I'm going to say it's a Kirazik class assault fighter. How does that sound in terms of trying to get that name right?
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
I don't know.
It has 1 black blast damage and 1 edge-dependent unit damage. It has
probably from some video game I've never seen.
I don't know about that. That just seems like a name of a... assault fighter to me, like that.
Yeah.
That seems Star Wars University to me.
That was another joke that went over your head.
Oh, man, I'm
Let's
just
do it one pod.
Yeah, cast. Anyway,
this guy's gotten a lot of heat for being overcosted. I kind of like him. I feel like if you're gonna play Dengar, you have to have some way to capture units. It'd be better if they gave him a card like capture. Or some more direct capture.
But oh, like a card that would actually capture all units.
Exactly. That would probably be too strong, though. So this guy does capture a bunch of useful guys. I almost said useless. It captures 3PO, some other guys. Essentially,
Tauntauns.
Yeah.
They're any of the kind of the 1-cost chuds, Hoth operative.
Right. I think people just wouldn't play those guys. But the point is, like, if you're playing capture events and you have the opportunity to either make them not play 3PO or capture him, that's kind of a win. Now your capture event is actually going through.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It does seem really situational. I think somebody calculated on the boards. As always, I looked at it and was like, oh, that's a really good thing to know, and I immediately forgot who calculated it. But I think there's something like 21 units in the light side that is cost 1 or lower.
But that number doesn't really matter. It really matters, are they actually decent units?
Or are they going to play them once they see the Krizak or X?
Well, not even that, but once they see anything from Dengar's pod, they know you have 2 to 4 copies of that fighter. They're just not going to drop down those 1-cost guys.
Sure.
So at that point, I would like this fighter way more if it was only 1 copy. I feel like 2 is not good, because then it's 2 overcosted units that have a very specific function, and probably 4 of them if you're building a Dengar deck.
Sure. I mean, I always, whenever I see 2 units in an objective set, it always screams to me that FFG and the playtesters and the game designers, their intention for that objective set is for there only to be 1 copy of it in your deck.
Yeah, I agree. Unless it's something...
ridiculous.
Yes,
exactly. Like the Executor.
Yeah, like the Executor. Like Killing Cold is another example of that. Like, do you really need 4 Ice Trompers? 2 Ice Trompers is usually perfect. And then if you run into a mains deck, you have 2 Ice Trompers. If you run into a vehicle deck, do you really want 4 Ice Trompers?
Sure. I mean, that tends to be my feeling. So then I'm thinking to myself, okay, so what scum deck would I run where I only run 1 copy of Dengar, right? So now I'm not like really intending for Dengar to be a mainstay of the deck. He's just a one-off in it. Like, maybe I'll see him, maybe I won't. Is there a deck that you can do that's like scum mains, right? Where you just have a couple of 1 copy cards, 1 copy of Dengar, 1 copy of Boba Fett.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Copies of Jabba. I think
Dengar is awful as just like a one-of, not built around him with a lot of unit capture. Because his icons are really bad for 4 cost.
Sure. You can convince me of that.
He really has... he's a build-around to me. And I think what they did is they just made it purposely harder to build around him by putting in 2 copies of that fighter. And Remote Hideout... I don't really like this one either. A 0 for 2 is decent, but I'm again in the spot where I'm not a huge fan of double focusing stuff. And 0 for 2 would be fine, but the fact that you have to put a token on each or on the first unit you play each turn makes it a lot more restrictive. It makes it so like not only do you have to play Dengar with like some sort of health, now you have to play him with something like Jawas that you can have a unit that you can use that on.
Sure. I mean, it's a huge double-sided card for something, for the quick ability to put out a resource and have two resources right there immediate to you, right? I mean, there's a lot of options for that that are pretty good. But the cost of for every turn from that point onwards, your first unit being focused, that's pretty restricted. That's a really heavy cost to play this card.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like your options in this deck are getting slimmer and slimmer. Like, it's building itself, and it's building a pretty bad deck.
You know, I'm liking the deck that I have in my head. Hmm. I'm going to have to build it and see what happens tomorrow. I'm sure it's terrible.
Oh, cool. So we're going to get to see a Dengar deck tomorrow?
I mean, it's not a Dengar deck. I have a Scum deck that Dengar can maybe work into.
Okay.
But it's probably bad.
Is it going to be like Kublai Khan?
No, I imagine it'll be equally as bad. So yeah, I guess it will be like Kublai Khan.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so remote hideout, if it was 0/1 and no downside, it would be insanely good. 0/2 with a heavy downside is pretty rough.
Sure. I mean, I like your idea of using the Jawas as fodder for this. There's a bunch of other ones. Like, if you're playing a deck and it has Gamorrean Guards, and it's like, yeah, sure, I'll play the Gamorrean Guard.
Right. Like, how about Espo Troopers?
Yeah, or you've said those guys so many times this podcast.
Every deck they go in now. They're just a staple of the environment.
There you go. The meta has defined them as important.
That might have been sarcasm.
No, that's true. I think one of the big things about Remote Hideout that's really cool is that it's 0/2, but it's not limited. So you can play it first turn and then spend its resource to play like a prized possession. And you've gained a resource for that turn, right? So if you were starting off with 4 and you were pretty limited, you now have 5 that you can use with no drawback.
Yep. And I'm pretty sure there is a card that removes focus from an objective or enhancement in Boba Fett's pod, either the event or the objective itself.
Sure.
So you can double focus it and bring it back. So it's not all bad. I'm just saying, it's a pretty heavy cost.
Yes, I'm not denying that.
And then Target of Opportunity, which is good. I don't see it being that good in this deck. I think this is more of a control deck. I would have rathered it was a twist or maybe even a heat. But Target's not bad.
Sure. I mean, it's a nice fake card. It gives you some good numbers. I mean, it helps out Scum in one of the areas that it's notoriously known for, which is not being able to close out the game by finishing off objectives, right? Like, you normally can control the board, and then the game ends, and you maybe have not taken out even any objectives.
Right.
And then that's really bad for your tiebreaker. So Target of Opportunity, you know, that one extra damage, you know, could put you over the edge.
Yep. That could be. All right. What's next? Is there an Imperial one?
There's a neutral dark side.
Let's do that one.
This one's going to go really quick, folks.
And it was already spoiled by Team Covenant, and they're amazing spoilers. Those guys should just quit everything else they're doing and just do that.
They do make everybody else look like chumps.
I almost watched the whole thing, even though I knew it was 5 copies of Vast Resources as soon as they did 3 of them. I was like, oh, so it's going to be 5 of that. Wow.
I just like the way that their cards sit there floating above them.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, and the next card is like, and it floats there above them. Also, I really like their casting job that they did for their recordings of the championships from Gen Con. Those are really cool, too, in the same way that, like, when one of the players was playing, plays a card, the little screen pops up. There's like a little pop-up that comes up, and it tells you exactly the text on that card, and then it goes away. And I thought that was just
class. We need that for our podcast. Like, when people listen to the podcast, like, a virtual card pops in front of them. So if you could get on programming that would be really useful.
So I'm supposed to do that? You can't handle that at all?
No, definitely not. Maybe one of our listeners can. We've got some pretty smart listeners.
We definitely have listeners who are more versed with computers than we are.
I think everyone might be.
Well, definitely for you.
Yeah. All right, so Endless Reserves. While this objective is undamaged, each event card in your stack gains one force icon when resolving an edge battle. Problem? Dark side stuff doesn't go undamaged for long. I mean, light side is trying to knock stuff out. If this is an issue, they'll just put a damage on it. Boom, boom, done.
Sure. And not only that, this whole objective is just the same card repeated 5 times.
Yeah. So, and it's a zero cost card, which is good. Only one force icon. Action, reduce the cost of the next card you play this phase by 1. So, Ben, can I drop 3 vast resources and reduce something by 3?
No, you can't.
Well, that's kind of lame.
Yeah, because it says reduce the next card you play this phase by 1. So if you play 1, it can reduce the cost of your next zero cost vast resources by 1 too.
So if I play even one copy of this, and I get unlucky and I draw 3 in my hand, I probably am going to have 2 1 force icon edge cards left after my deploy phase.
Sure.
That does not sound promising to me.
No. You know what? We should probably make a deck that has 2 copies of this objective in it.
I would love to play against your deck with 2 copies of this.
in a life or death situation.
I'll play like some tri-colored Ewok deck. It'll be loads of fun.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is the worst pot I've ever seen in any game.
In any game?
Yep.
Well, I mean, there's not many other games that have a pot system.
It's the only game that I know of. So my hyperbolicness actually is probably dead on. Now, having said that, you never know, right? Like, there could be some deck in the future where the pot, where the objective itself is really strong, and that, you know, you want to have that one extra resource all over the place.
But yeah.
I don't see it now. Maybe someone will have it at Worlds, and they'll beat me with it, and they'll say, remember when you said this was the worst pot ever? How do you like them apples?
I really like that you call out, you know, our listeners and anybody who might be going to Worlds to, like, build the worst deck to prove you wrong. Like, everybody should take my advice, and if you particularly dislike me, which we all know there are people out there who particularly dislike Tiny.
What? That can't be.
Anyway.
I thought the whole world and I were besties.
Anyway. And, you know, and you're just like, I think you should totally show up with a vast reserves resources deck. Like, just do it. And, like, somebody's going to try and do it, and then they're just going to be angry at you even more because now they've lost every game they tried to play.
Well, I got to say, if someone is crazy enough to do that, they might deserve to lose.
Oh, okay. So, like, you're just trying to goad anybody. I feel like it just is not a good idea.
No, I'm not goading anyone. That was a sarcastic statement, which you missed. That's like 2 pods in a row, man. You got to really buckle down here.
All right, my brain's not really working today.
It's terrible. Everyone knows it.
Move on. Get out of here.
Let's go to the Rebels. So next up, the Rebels. This is a very interesting objective set. So we have Evacuation Procedure, Hoth. I like that. Reaction, after your opponent's turn begins, sacrifice a unit to remove all focus tokens from target enhancement or Hoth objective. Ooh, that's kind of spicy. So you can have out that neutral Hoth one, triple focus it, and sacrifice some terrible unit and completely refresh it. I like the sound of that.
Sure. I mean, I don't know how many units can be classed as terribly. I mean, I can think of a few. But there aren't that many units that I would class as terrible units in the standard Hoth deck. I did some air quotes there, people, for a terrible unit. Just
yeah.
So everybody can't see it.
Maybe not in the standard Hoth deck, but you could certainly run Mobilize the Squadrons, put out your rookie pilot, and have him actually be useful.
Have him do something.
Yeah.
Just do anything.
All right, so the all-star is Han Solo. Yep.
A Rebel Han. Rebel Han.
He has a lot of good things going for him. 4 cost. 3 force icons, and he's elite. Now he has some bad things going for him. He only has 2 health again. His icons are pretty awful. 2 guns and a blast. His interrupt is potentially world-breaking.
Sure.
When this unit leaves play, search your deck for a rebel card, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. So many things come to mind of what you can do with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really strong card. It's one of those ones that you really have to think about in terms of deck building. How many Rebel cards in there are you going to put? How many of them are so important that you want to go searching for them? There's definitely been a lot of talk. You know, it seems like it can be very combo with this deck, and also just kind of more utilitarian in terms of, like, the type of things that you're going for. One of the examples I've seen is, like, say it's close to the end of the game, and Han dies, and all you have to do is now go search for your last Rebel Assault and blow up the last objective to win.
Yep. And not only does he have to die, you can just bounce him with any number of bouncing mechanics.
Bouncing mechanics. So, any of the fallbacks and
yeah, he seems to combo well with fallback. He seems to combo well with smugglers. It just seems to be a number of ways to get him back to your hand, in addition to just letting him die. Yeah. So you will be able to search. The question is it worth it to pay four in a Rebel deck for a search, to pay two more for something else? If his icons were great, I'd say this is the best card I've seen in a long time. His icons are terrible. And so then I'm thinking, well, I don't know if this guy's good or not. Like, he's a great combo card, but is he worth paying four for to just bounce back to my hand to go search out the card I actually want?
Sure. It really just is going to always, at that point, depend on your combo that you're trying to get.
Yep. If your combo is to get a buried outpost, it's probably not worth it.
Nope.
If it's to get some other game-breaking combo that is not coming to my mind right now, then maybe he's going to end up being good. And I think down the line, he's going to be one of those cards that the design team always has to be like, hey, playtesters, make sure you test this new pod with Han, because it might break the world.
Sure. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about trying to use it with Leia. I mean, I think anytime a good, non-exclusively vehicle-based Rebel pod comes out, especially one that looks to be oriented towards the combo, people want to use Leia in some way. And she might be worth it. You go look for Leia after you use Han's ability, so that way you can clear some of your focus that's on the table. But it becomes, you know, Leia is just as fragile as she has always been. There's nothing in this objective set that makes her more reliable or stronger or more resilient on the board.
Right. And it's not like you get to go get her and put her into play. Now you have to then wait till your next deploy phase,
pay to
deploy her,
yep.
She gets force choked, and then your combo goes away.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, she's one of those cards that every time a card like Han or some bounce mechanic comes out, I go, okay, guys, we got to test this with Leia. And inevitably the answer is, do you remember force choke? That card's really strong against Leia, and it's still in the meta.
Yep.
So, all
right.
We'll see.
Next card. Next card is Tarin Farr.
I don't know. From a video game or a real person? I don't know.
No, this is a real person. This person is in the movie.
Oh, cool.
Standby ion control. Fire. Those are her lines. She
there
has
you go.
Those lines.
I can't believe. I can't believe I don't remember her with that single line.
I think those are two lines there in
wow.
A screenplay.
That's I can't believe me.
Yeah, look, there's the quote right there from her on the card. I didn't even realize that.
I thought we just talked about that. I don't read cards. Why would I read quotes? I've never once read a flavor text of any Star Wars card. That is my first. And I will remember that always.
No, you won't.
No, I won't.
It's a 2-cost, 1-health unit with 1 force icon. She has a edge-dependent tactics icon. She has the shielding keyword, and she has the interrupt. When this unit leaves play, place 1 focus token on a target enemy enhancement.
Yeah. I'm sort of racking my brain as to figure out why she's not terrible.
This is something I find really interesting here, right? Like, so it's to me, it seems like, right, that this Rebel objective set is there to kind of be the antithesis of the Executor one, right? That has some sacrifice mechanics in there in the sense that, like, when Han leaves play, you get a bonus. When Tarin Farr leaves play, you get a bonus. But the problem is, it's not costed the same way, right? Like, she would be amazing if this unit was a 1-for-1, similar to the ISB. Like, take away shielding, you know, give her a white edge icon, like, have her be the exact same way. but have her one for one without shielding, she's an amazing card, right? Like all of a sudden, like, you then want to do things like use her with evacuation procedure, but she costs two, right? Like, you don't want to use evacuation procedure on a two cost card that you just spent resources on.
Yeah. Not only that, but Rebels generally to this point haven't had a ton of resources. You know, if this is a card in a Sith deck and you can have 12 resources on the board and use two for her, that's a lot more reasonable than I have five resources. I'm really going to spend two on this.
Right. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't love her. I mean, she hits the board and they just choke her instantly before you can do anything.
Yeah, and then you get the tactics wanted down to there. You get the tactics down on enemy enhancement there.
Yep, and that could be useful. I mean, a lot of Sith decks run the Navy stuff just for those enhancements, and maybe that'll be worth it. So she might not be as bad as I'm giving her credit for, but I don't love her, I'll say that.
I mean, I can only think of off the top of my head, you know, for dark side enhancements that require placing focus on them. Like, all I can think of are resource ones, right? There's nothing like trust your feelings. There's nothing like the heavy blaster emplacement. I guess there's the new trooper one where it requires you to focus it to give one trooper a blast icon, but I don't see that as being a meta-defining card that needs to be controlled.
Right. I don't think you're building around that.
Right. Everything else to me just seems like it's a resource. So how important is it to, like, over-tactics one resource?
I mean, it can slow Sith down, right, especially an Executor deck. The problem is they have so many resources, and they have the Holocron that just gets around anything that Rebels could do to it. It's just tough, I think, to play the lockdown game against a Sith deck.
Sure.
It used to be viable, right? Like, the whole point was you're always counting. Okay, they have five. If I can somehow take out that one, they can't play Vader. I know they can't play Palpatine. Now that game is gone. At any moment, you blink and Palpatine hits the table.
Right.
It's a lot tougher now.
Sure. And the next card is a 3-3 vehicle transport. Rebel, again, has one focus icon. It is Bright Hope. Bright Hope has one black unit damage and one edge-enabled tactics damage. Has a reaction. After a friendly unit leaves play, remove one token, any type, from this unit.
This card I like a little bit more.
This card has really good synergy. This card has a lot of versatility.
Yeah, it has versatility and it has synergy. I mean, you can basically use it as like a red two. And if you could do things like put Astromech Droid on it or something else like that, it stays alive a little bit longer, I feel like.
Right.
And it could pick up icons and then refresh itself, which could be really good.
Sure. I mean, the only thing I can think of that would be good, I mean, obviously you say if it could take Astromech Droid, because it can't, right? Or can it?
I think it can.
Because that can go on any vehicle?
Yeah, I think it's only Wedge and Luke that go on a certain vehicle. Could be wrong.
Sure. So you're really limited here by, you know, if you wanted to go the Bright Hope route and you could put an Astromech on it and give it better icons. And it does have a lot of versatility. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, your opponent's probably not going to waste time focusing it down. But, like, if it gets focused down and a unit goes, you know, is destroyed or anything happens to it, oop, it's not focused anymore. Better hope your opponent still has cards in hand for an edge battle and or units left to defend. You know, it's getting close to dying. Oh, another unit left play. No big deal. I'm just going to remove some damage from it. It's still alive. It does seem like a very resilient little transport.
Yeah, and it seems like this whole pod works really well with fallback. Because all three of these cards synergize incredibly well with fallback.
Yeah, I can see that, because if you don't pick Bright Hope as one of the cards, you fall back.
Yeah, exactly. You don't pick Bright Hope, you pick Torrenfar, or say you pick Han, it refreshes Bright Hope. You go get Rebel Assault. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Next card, Buried Outpost. Remember when I said if it was 0 for 1, it'd be better?
Right.
Yeah, this is a lot better.
This is a lot better. So unlike Remote Hideout, this is what a good zero cost, you know, resource enhancement looks like. That doesn't have a permanent drawback to it. It's zero for one. If you don't sacrifice a unit when it comes into play, you put a focus on it. So it's not something you get to use right away. It's not a first turn card. It doesn't boost you right away, but it is it's not a limited card. I was going to say unlimited. It's not a limited card. You can play it if you happen to have something in play that would make sense for you to sacrifice it. There's a one cost unit that you don't want that has used its out, you know, its abilities or its tactics down. You want to trigger something like Torn Far or Han Solo. Han Solo already has a damage on him. Like, he's a force choke away. You play Buried Outposts. You now have that resource. You know, you go looking for whatever it is you wanted with Han to begin with, and now you have a resource to play it with. Like, it has a lot more versatility than Remote Hideout does.
Yep. A card I'm thinking could be interesting to go get with Han is the Hoth Gear. So you could potentially play like a character deck without protectors that you know you're going to be able to loop Han into the gear. Like, you could even play Han, play fallback, get him back, get the gear, then next turn play Han plus gear. So if Han had really good icons, I think he'd be really broken.
Sure. So it's, I mean, probably the gear good. Can go on any character, so it just needs a way. Maybe we're looking at a deck that just needs to be more character oriented in everything it does.
Yeah, maybe. I really don't have a good answer.
Surprise.
All right, so the last pod.
Last card in that pod is also, by the way, Battle of Hoth.
Yeah, which is amazing. So.
Yep. No need to talk about that.
Yep.
Tiny's already had his love affair with Battle of Hoth several times in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's changed. It's amazing. I love it. It's a pro card. So the last pod is the Jedi pod, which we already spoiled. We'll talk about very briefly. The Hero's Resolve. Still, okay, so the bottom line is I have not found a good spot for this pod. It feels like Hero's Resolve is really good. Luke is really good. But it doesn't synergize well with speeders. It doesn't synergize well with anything.
Sure. Why are you saying that, Tiny? What makes you feel like that?
The reason I say that is because if it's in a speeder deck, you have to give up smugglers, which means you're giving up prepare for evac, which means you're giving up your amazing tiebreaker, and you're giving up your protection. So you could say, well, that's okay. I'm going to put it in with, like, home one, red two, red five. And I feel like if you go that route, you're really running into the problem of how are you going to win edge battles and how are you going to keep your guys alive? Like, if you're going to lose the edge battle and have protectors, that's okay. But if you're going to lose the edge battle and not have protectors, how exactly are you not just dying all the time?
Well, I mean, I think the argument for that would be is that this pod answer, like, has some innate ability built into it to be resilient in that situation, right? So you're playing in the deck that you laid out just then with Home One and the other fighters, not necessarily the speeders, as the core part of it, right? You might not have a Twist of Fate. And, as we've said probably from the first episode, Twist of Fate is really strong. Having it, using it in important edge battles can really change the flow of the game. I think everybody's seen it. Everybody knows that. That's fine. But people would argue, and I think, to some degree correctly, that the objective here is great for the edge battle. It adds one force icon to everything in your edge stack when it resolves. All right, so it comes with two really good edge cards. It comes with Heat of Battle, Battle of Hoth. If you're running two copies of this in the deck, you're running two Battles of Hoth. You have Battles of Hoth just out of this objective set. That's six objectives. The problem is, and like I said at the beginning of this monologue, tirade, rant, is that Twist of Fate is just, it just breaks it, right? Like, you're like, okay, I won this edge battle, right? I have Hero's Resolve turned on. I have two Battles of Hoth. I have a Heat of Battle in there. That's eight icons plus another three. I have 11 icons. There's no way I can lose. Your opponent just plays one card. There's a Twist of Fate, and then all those edge icons are gone. Your hand is depleted, and there's the ball game.
Hey, Ben, you're really bad at edge battles if you're putting those three in against their one. Just a heads up. Like, that was the worst edge battle play I've ever heard of.
Okay. That's fair enough. This is just an example, Tiny.
Yeah.
But...
No, I do see what you're saying. On the plus side, there is really good synergy with Heroes Resolve if you're playing Battle of Hoth, in that even if Darkseid puts the one damage on it, during the edge battle itself, you can play Battle of Hoth, pull the damage off Heroes Resolve, and it's turned on. But Ben, this to me is the downside of the deck. We're right back where we were at the beginning with Rebel. What if you don't draw Heroes Resolve as one of your four objectives?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I feel like there's a lot of issues in the meta right now in terms of strong decks, like some of the strongest decks, relying very heavily on their objective draws. Yep. And we saw this coming out of Edge of Darkness with the Han, Chewie, Falcon type build, where if you got, you know, a set of Wookiees and Wookiee Life Debt on your first turn, you know, you were in business. You know, your Han wasn't dying, your Chewbacca wasn't dying, you can move damage around however you want. Falcon comes into play, oh no, everything's in trouble. Like, it was a terrible thing. But as soon as you take out Wookiee Life Debt from that, you know, equation, it's much weaker. And I think there's an issue here with this one, where if you're relying on having Heroes Resolve, you know, that portion of games where you don't see it as an option at your beginning hand is going to be a real problem. And here's an interesting thing, Tiny. This is one of those things that really is quite super, like, really easy to plan out if you know what's going to happen, but also, like, really counterintuitive, is if you have a Battle of Hoth and your opponent has a Battle of Hoth and you're the light side and it's the dark side, the fate priority for the light side Battle of Hoth is lower than the dark side one. So you can play an edge battle, reveal your edge cards, go to resolve your fate cards, you know, and if there's a damage on Heroes Resolve, right, you remove that damage only to have your opponent place one right back on it, which then turns it off again before the stack resolves completely, and you get the bonus out of that.
Yep. So the problem there is, essentially, dark side has two ways to prevent your Battle of Hoth from working. They can just twist it, or they can play their own, making it pretty difficult to turn that Heroes Resolve back on.
Yep. Yep. It's a problem.
So I'm still stuck with the objective looks fairly strong, especially against a Navy deck where the Tauntaun is actually worth something. But I'm really struggling to make this work. So I'm hoping that one of our listeners has tried this home one, red two, red five build, and can email the show and either say, yeah, it's a bit dicey, or what are you guys talking about? This thing's amazing. Go build it. Stop being dumb.
Sure. I mean, I feel like it's just another light side deck where the design of the deck is something oriented towards a very, like, systematic, oriented beatdown, where, like, you just play the units in your hand, you do damage to objectives, and then, you know, you hope that your opponent doesn't have an answer to it. And as soon as there's an answer, I think that's when the problem arises.
Yeah, it looks a lot like the deck that Matt Coles ran at Gen Con. Like, I don't know much about his day, because I only saw the one game in which he essentially did that. He put units on the board, he attacked with them, and lost. Like, that's how it seems to me that this deck would also work.
Sure.
So that's the fourth pack, Ben. What do you think overall?
I think it ranks up there. I don't know if this is the best Hoth cycle force pack. It's definitely better than some. There's still that couple in the middle where I really was not blown away with the cards that you got in them. Is it as good as the one that gave us Echo Caverns? Or, you know, last month's, quote-unquote, month's Battle of Hoth Force Pack? I don't know, but it's up there. I think it's up there. It's in the upper 50% of Force Packs, I think, for this particular cycle.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a one thumbs up. The Executor Pod is really good, and it's going to be meta-defining. Luke could end up being meta-defining. Han, at some point, will be. I can almost guarantee that there's going to be some point where Han is totally meta-defining, but I really don't think it's now. And Dengar could be really good as well. It just feels like a down-the-line kind of pod with the one pod that's amazing now in the Executor.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I still really like how much design space is left in this game.
Not that there's,
one thing that Magic has proven is not that there's ever a limit in design space, but just really how much is there is possible still at this point in time.
I mean, I think a better comparison is Game of Thrones because they don't have the rotation. And I kind of feel like Game of Thrones is out of design space. Like, we're just getting cards that are real strong sometimes. And you're like, okay, that card's just really strong. It's not cuter. It's not more interesting. It's just stronger.
Right.
And I don't feel like we're at that point with Star Wars yet. I mean, like, you have the option to do that. Like,
I think we would be in a much more problematic situation if we were already dealing with excessive power creep.
Yes, that is true. We got a ways to go before we see that.
Yeah. And that's the great way that these objective sets are designed, right, and the design of the game is that at some point that might happen, but it's going to be really easy to curb.
Yes, with the pod system, it makes it really interesting when you design cards. I talked to a lot of people recently who say things like, Star Wars looks interesting, but I hate the pod system. This is especially on Soulforge. I've been trying to, you guys think, well, he's abandoning Star Wars for Soulforge. Not at all. I'm trying to infect the Soulforge community with the Star Wars virus, and it's working. I've gotten a bunch of people interested, but a lot of them say, I hate the pod system, and I keep telling them the pod system is really cool. It allows them to have a lot more balance in the game.
I mean, the pod system, I've gotten to the point, and I think you have too, and this is a complete tangent, everybody. From the Force Pack is over. We're just talking now. How much more difficult it is to make a Game of Thrones deck, right? Like, I can go online. I can use a deck builder. I'll make a Game of Thrones deck. And then I have to go through my giant box of cards where I have some cards that are multi-faction, and is it in this faction or is it in this faction right now? Like, is this card in the Lannister one or is it in the Targaryen one? I have no idea. Let me look through all of the cards to find it. Yes. Where here, I keep my objectives fairly well organized. There's a small enough number that I can do that. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a quick adjustment to my deck. I go, oh, now my deck's ready to go. It's taking me 3 minutes. I've either made a completely new deck or I've changed 50% of it. There was no problems. I didn't have to look for anything. It's great. And it's totally spoiled me to the point where I'm like, Game of Thrones, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, and I'm way worse than you. I have a giant box of Abandoned Thrones decks. And so when I need to build a new deck, I'm like, okay, where's that card? And I go look through my Martell pile. Nope, it's not in there. And then I take a big sigh and I go, oh no, it's in the box of Abandoned decks, isn't it? And I have to just look through 1,000 cards one by one till I come across it.
I mean, that sounds like a terrible children's Christmas movie.
It's the worst.
Box of Abandoned decks.
It is absolutely the worst. So yes, Star Wars, you have spoiled me. I'm a spoiled brat now.
But yeah, I think people who argue against it haven't given it the shakedown it deserves, because it's very unique. It's very unlike anything else out there. And so far, I particularly like the way it's done.
Every person I've met who says, I really hate the deck design, I say, what level of player are you? And they always say, oh, I'm a casual player. And I say, well, then that doesn't really count, right? Like, you can either enjoy it or not enjoy it as a casual player, but you haven't actually figured out whether or not it has the flaws that you're claiming it has until you've invested time in it and used the deck building to your advantage. The perfect knowledge that you get from the deck building system completely changes the way this game is played versus other games. There's a lot more bluffing involved. There's a lot more, well, I know that he has that, but he knows that I have this, and then I have this counter, but he knows that, so now I'm going to play this because he knows that, right? Like, you just don't do that as much in other games. You can, but you're saying, like, he might have that card, which is way different than, I know it's in his deck, and he has two copies, and he's drawn zero. So the odds are X that he actually has it in his hand.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a very different game for that reason, and I can understand. I mean, there's definitely a very sharp divide in this game between very top competitive players and for people who want to play casually. And just to, like, you know, and I see it all the time. Like, even there's a local game store here who, you know, they sometimes host monthly events in the area. And one of the comments I got was like, yeah, we had four people show up. But these people, you know, the owner of the store was like, these people aren't really looking for a competitive game. They're already playing Magic as a competitive game. They want Star Wars to be fun. And I can understand that. But at the same time, you know, it's really hard to be like, I want this game to be fun. Everybody should have it fun in this exactly in the same way that Tiny takes the stance of, I want this game to be competitive. Everybody should play it competitively. It's just very hard to, like, have it one way or the other in terms of this. I mean, right now, Star Wars is treated as a competitive game by FFG. The ultimate goal for it to be, you know, the reason why they're holding it at Worlds is that it is competitive in nature. It's one-on-one. You have these things. But they're still, at some point, you know, giving something back to the people who don't want it to be a competitive game by doing things like having the Balance of the Force come out, which has multiplayer decks in it, and allowing a 2v2 system, which is, I'm assuming, going to be slightly more relaxed than a 1v1. But who knows? Maybe it's even more cutthroat.
Yeah, and we've tried to test it, like, guessing at what the rules are going to be. And if we're anywhere near accurate, it's really fun. Like, it's the format that I think is going to be the fun format. Because even if only one of you is competitive, you can sort of help your teammate. Unless you're me, and you're helping Tyler, and then he curses you out, and then makes a better play than you told him was a better play. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have a very limited game space in your brain. For me, I feel like you will run two single-player decks concurrently, if you had the choice of what to do with the 2v2.
Wow. No, I can see not at all. People, you're insane. I can totally decks that work together.
See somebody who actually, you know, is thinking in that terms, Tiny, being able to see better plays spread out over two people's decks, as opposed to you being like, this is how you have to do it, because this is what happens in 1v1.
Okay. So you're already throwing down the gauntlet. Before 2v2 is even released, you're going to make the claim that you're better than me at 2v2? Is that where we're going?
I would never say something like
that. Okay, sure. It seemed like you were hinting.
So egotastic. No, never.
Okay. I was just curious. I don't have a problem with the claim. I just wanted to make sure that we knew the claim so that we could either validate or invalidate your theory.
Well, it's not like you're going to have an option to lose to me in 2v2 at Worlds, because you're going to try and play Game of Thrones for some reason. I mean, if I knew for a fact that you would play, then I would just crush you in that tournament.
Wouldn't we be partners in that tournament?
Oh, I guess I guess there's one way of looking at it.
So we're going to move to our last segment of the day, and this has been chatted about a lot online, and that's what makes a great player. And the bottom line is, that's like a 7-hour episode. you know, go through, listen to everything
we didn't cover this last time about
building a deck, making it efficient, playing edge battles well, knowing all the cards. There are a lot of things you have to do to become a great player. But Ben and I will each select one thing that we think is important to becoming great.
My advice really comes down to, and I think Tiny just mentioned this, and I really think this is what makes an amazing player, is the idea that this game can give you almost perfect knowledge of what your opponent is doing. And that perfect knowledge should govern everything that you do. It should govern everything from the number of, you know, what cards, what units you play during your turn, which order you play them in, and, you know, in reference to maybe Guardian. You always play the Guardian of Peace first against a Sith deck. You don't want to play Yoda first and have him choked before you have a chance to protect him. You always play 3PO first, something along those orders. But it should also govern everything else, including your edge battles, right? So when you play an edge card, you have to think to yourself, I know these objectives are in his deck. That means this many Twists of Fates. It means this many Heats of Battle. It means this many Targets of Opportunity. It means that his max number one card icon drop can be this number, right? Like if you're playing a deck and it doesn't have Palpatine Invader in it, the max number that they have in one card is three. What cards are those ones? I mean, it's that type of knowledge and applying it to the game that can make you such an amazing Star Wars player.
Yep. That's my biggest number one piece of advice also, is just memorize every single card. And
well, you can't have the same one as
me. I'm just talking about yours, and then I'll do mine. For instance, a friend of mine who is a very, very talented card player generally and is pretty good at Star Wars but hasn't made that next leap yet because he hasn't memorized anything really. Like I'll say, you know, okay, hey, what pods are the twists in? And he'll say, I don't know. There's one in Leia's pod, right? And I'll say, yep. And he's like, there's one in a standard Sith deck, right? I'm like, yes. Which pod? I don't remember. That's the kind of stuff that, like, going to the very basics of memorizing cards, know which pod the twists are in, and be able to identify really quickly, my opponent has two twists, potentially four twists, maybe no twists. As soon as you figure out your opponent has no twists, they are at your mercy. You can do some really cruel things to them. So I think there's a lot of different levels of good, pretty good, really good players. Like having perfect knowledge of every card is what can push you into that really amazing player. Knowing all the twists, that can get you into the good category. But a more basic level is knowing like who you're attacking with and what little tricks you can do. So for instance, one of the most basic elements of the game is having, say, three units on the board. Your opponent only has one unit on the board. It does not have a tactics icon. And you have one unit on the board that has, you know, say it's a Twi'lek, and it has like one white tactics icon. So one of the more basic things to push you from not knowing really how to play that well to being decent is to know you want to attack with him first, so that if they don't block with Vader, you just tactics him out. If they do block with Vader, he kills your guy you don't care about, and then the other two guys can go in unscathed and do all their black blast damage or all their white blast damage and make it black and go in and do their max damage. So knowing who you need to attack with first and playing guys in your deck specifically to do that and to be able to see the board and knowing you can do that are really critical. And this can also be for blocking. Let's say your opponent makes an attack. You have one guy with tactics and you know you can win that edge battle because you're Sith. You have a twist. You have some other good stuff. Knowing that you can block, absorb the attack that the guy is making, and then tactics another guy who's not attacking yet, who poses the real threat, and be able to do little tricks like that. Those are really basic pieces of advice for how to move from sort of that like more beginner phase to more of the intermediate phase.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a good one too. Just a very good table awareness and what that means is really important.
So, as I said, I mean, it's a really complex topic. Check the forum, check our past podcasts where we've gone into.
There's only 20 episodes, people. It's not like we're asking you to spend a whole day listening to our podcast. Oh, wait, never mind. That is a 24-hour period of time.
Hey, man, some people watch all six movies back to back to back. Instead of doing that, you could listen to a couple podcasts and reminisce with us about the Smuggler's Den build, and you could laugh at me when I said Blaster Emplacement was the best card in the game back in episode one. You know, have a good time. Yeah. Laughing at Tiny is always fun.
The discussion of the Infinite Leia combo, which I've seen anybody pull off. So let's finish out this week, Tiny, with a card of the week.
Sounds good.
Do you have one that you're particularly excited about?
All right, so my card of the week is the Sith Holocron, and we already talked about it a little bit, but essentially this card takes really good Sith decks and makes them amazing. Being able to drop a Palpatine whenever you want. To me, it's not just the turn one Palpatine. Turn one Palpatine is not always the best play, but being able to keep them guessing to where they can no longer say, he only has four resources out, I'm safe. I can just go ahead, aggressively attack with all these mains, and then Palpatine hits the floor running and double tactics all of them. It's just really difficult to play against Sith now that they have this holocron.
Sure. Yeah, I know it definitely throws a big monkey wrench into that whole, just in general, the way it works, right? Like, you're absolutely right. Like, you always used to be very reliant on the fact that, like, they only have four resources next turn. I don't have to worry about Palpatine. And that just goes completely out the window.
Yep. And that's another thing that is how you improve as a player, is to be able to have that board awareness of knowing how much the cards cost in their deck that they want to play, and knowing if they're going to be able to play them, and then playing your turn accordingly. Now, Sith Holocron messes with that, but it's still important to know this type of information.
Yep. All right. And so my card of the week, to fly in the face of Tiny Grimes as much as possible. I know people like it when I do that. I'm going to say the new pilot, Luke. He's nice. My card of the week. I'm really excited to get a chance to play with him in the speeder and or fighter deck. Having that extra tactics icon, watching him do a somersault out of the damaged fighter or speeder onto the table as a unit. Pretty excited about that. Pretty thrilled.
Are you going to spin Luke when he comes out so he can sort of emulate that somersault?
When that speeder goes down, I'm going to take the card, I'm going to flip it in the air, and wherever it lands, but it still counts as a unit because that's what I do.
All right. Are you going to have a catchphrase like, yippee-ki-yay, speeda?
No.
No. That's too bad. Luke's really good. I can't wait to see you play with him this week.
Sounds really inappropriate.
I'm hoping you actually make his pod good. It'll be great if we have an actual good light side deck. Because I don't know about the rest of you, but we're really struggling with light side decks. There's a reason why we haven't been touting the newest, best light side deck, because guess what? We don't have anything.
Yep, I think that I agree with that.
That's all this week.
So that's it for this episode. You know what they say.
May the Force be with you.